Yeah, maybe we're going to see IRL streamers using dynamic microphones so that they can reject all of the police playing copyrighted music.
That's right. Point it the other way.
Away from them. Yeah. What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Gaming Careers Podcast. It's a special day for us, Ben, because Twitch no longer is randomizing the PogChamp emote. We have a new PogChamp.
Finally.
What are we now? We're halfway through February. We've just had Valentine's Day. So yeah, roughly halfway through February. And we now have a new PogChamp. What are your thoughts on Komodo Hype being the new face of the Twitch PogChamp?
You know, it's interesting. I thought it would come down. So they had a little vote this past week for letting the community choose who the PogChamp would be. Because they said that, you know, they wanted to keep the whole thing going with the randomized days, but technologically speaking, it wasn't feasible for them, I guess. So they had to choose one or the other, one final PogChamp emote. And this is the one that ended up winning the vote. I think it makes sense. I mean, I actually talked about a couple weeks back how they might use an animal or something in the future, because an animal can't go on Twitter and tweet out controversial takes and then, you know, get their emote taken down on Twitch. So I think it makes sense, and it's also one that people like a lot, so pretty good. I have some concerns on how the actual event went, sort of. I think a lot of streamers did, but overall, I think it's good to come out with this emote because it's familiar and people like it. But I don't know, did you have thoughts? Did you see any of the event itself?
Yeah, I mean, exactly like you said, we spoke a few weeks ago on the podcast about how Twitch is probably going to have to not do this rotating PogChamp every day because they were just getting too much hate for it, too many faces where people would then raid that person's stream for that day and, you know, dig up old tweets or anything that's questionable. And it was just bad PR really for Twitch. So they had to go down the route of setting a permanent one. We said it's probably going to be either a character that's been drawn or, you know, something universal like this. So I think it's the right decision. I actually quite like the PogChamp emote of the Komodo Hype. The only possible chance of it coming back and biting them in terms of PR is, you know, if the island of Komodo ever does something really bad, you know, that's the, I don't know what's going to happen. It's the, where the next Hitler comes from or something like that. I don't know. I think it's a tiny island, but I think this is a safe bet from Twitch's point of view. And it's a good way of doing it, having it as a vote at the end of the day. And I'm glad that it won because it's probably the least controversial and probably my favorite version of the PogChamp emote besides the original.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good and it's pretty true to the original form's face, the same kind of expression. It was interesting watching the actual reveal event because it was between this and one of the emote, and forgive me, I forget the name of the other person who was in the running, but that was the most used. So they looked at the data for the past, whatever, all the different PogChamps they put out there. And I think it was this one girl who had the most popular one, and then the Komodo one was just one that was familiar. So they let the chat vote with an extension, and then Komodo ended up winning by, like, I think 75-25%, so pretty overwhelmingly. I actually thought that they were going to let the girl win because they already had the Komodo. So people don't know this, but the Komodo Hype emote still works. So you have two ways to show that emote now, either type PogChamp or Komodo Hype. So really, I don't think it was a huge difference because we were going to have that emote either way. But yeah, I was surprised to see they actually had the Komodo Dragon win. Again, probably because you know, you can debate whether it was a real vote or if Twitch kind of had it already planned because they had all these videos ready to go with Komodo Hype and everything. So clearly they had everything ready just in case it won. I think it probably did still win authentically, but at the same time, really good for Twitch because they don't have that issue unless, like you said, the Komodo dragons as a species just run over the earth or something and we have to take that off of Twitch, then that would be a whole other issue. But yeah, I'm glad that we have one because I think having a consistent emote is important. I mean, look how, like, PogChamp would not have gotten to the point where it was in mainstream culture if it were all these different emotes, I think, because that face became iconic, even on, like, TikTok and other platforms outside of Twitch. So hopefully that'll happen with this emote too and other emotes. Having that kind of brand feel to the platform. So I'm excited for it overall.
It seems kind of crazy that we're like spending so much time talking about effectively what is like an emoji that you use on one website, but it's kind of, I think it's been symbolic with Twitch's growth. So it has been covered in the news and things like that about the original PogChamp emote and why that left and then now the replacement. So yeah. We'll pause that discussion for now because I feel like we've done it justice and we now have a new PogChamp face on Twitch. Other news from Twitch this week. I didn't see this actually really announced anywhere publicly, but being a Twitch partner, I get like a partner email every month, I think it is, that it comes through. And it usually just covers like a few topics that we already all knew about. But this one came up with something that I hadn't seen much. Firstly, it mentioned that Twitch Soundtrack, which is Twitch's version of like a music player where all the music supposedly is licensed so that you can use it on Twitch. They announced that they've got some new music. There's some new playlists in the pop, chill hip hop and synthwave categories. That's not the interesting news, don't worry. But something that we talked about in the end of 2020 podcast that we did was that they announced Versus, which was basically a platform where you could run your own tournaments on Twitch and, you know, have other streamers participate and like manage this whole thing. And we were like, what happened to that? They announced it and then nobody's ever been able to use it. Well, they now have access for partners to create and host competitions on Twitch. So I didn't see this announced anywhere. I don't know if I was just not on Twitter that day or if it really hasn't been talked about, but I am now on the Twitch Versus website where I can create a competition and I can go through a few of the details. Did you see this announced anywhere, Ben?
Yeah, well, I saw you mention this in our notes and I scoured the internet looking for anything and I could not find any. I mean, I found an FAQ for the program, but it was all from the side of being a participant and entering the competition, but there was nothing on how to actually create one. I try to find the partner info, but clearly you're the one who has all the info there. So I would love to hear your first thoughts on how accessible it is. And is it something that's pretty easy for streamers to do, or is it very beta? What does it look like to you?
Yeah, I mean, maybe they've just rolled this out to the cream of the crop, the gaming careers, only one access.
Wow. Okay. See how it is.
As I clear my throat. No, I think this is probably all partners that get this. So you get a create competition page and there's loads of info that you can put in. So things like the name of the competition, you need to put in a public contact, either a Discord URL or an email address, description, what prizes can be won, when it starts, when it ends, thumbnails, banner images, all those kind of things. Then for registration, you can select that anybody on the Twitch platform can register, or only followers of yours, or only subscribers of yours, or followers and subscribers of yours. You set an end date for registration, how long they have to actually check in after the window opens, and how many people you want to actually allow to participate in the competition, which is minimum 2, maximum 100 people. So, you know, in terms of a rollout, they must be pretty confident if it can handle 100 different people competing in a competition. So yeah, then you get onto game and format. This is probably the most interesting bit. So you get to choose which game, obviously, just so that it shows up in the Twitch categories, and whether you want the participants to be solo or as part of a team. And then finally, you get a format, which is basically the format of the competition. So do you want it to be a single elimination, which is just like the most traditional tournament bracket, where, you know, you fight somebody and the winner goes through to the next round and the loser just is eliminated. Or you can have double elimination, which I think is more popular. I think Dota, the international, runs a double elimination, and a lot of CSGO tournaments do that, where basically you have to lose 2 consecutive matches to be eliminated. So if you lose a first match, you drop down to the lower bracket. There's also round robin, where everybody plays everybody. And finally, a leaderboard, which is more suitable for games like Battle Royale or battle chess genres, racing games, things like that. So quite a lot of options, actually, when you create a competition. So I'm kind of surprised at this as a rollout. I guess the reason that they've only rolled it out to partners or selected partners is because they want to test the platform. But in terms of options, you've got absolutely loads here. So I'd be quite interested into seeing how streamers end up using this, because I can see it being a really good way to like bring your community together, especially if you have other streamers in your community who are going to stream your competition, you know, similar to how the chess PogChamps tournament was done and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's super interesting. It's good to hear that there's so many options they've baked into it, and it seems like it's pretty well built out for the beta. I haven't really seen anyone use this yet in terms of streamers. I haven't really seen anyone do a tournament. I know it just rolled out, sound like this week, so still pretty fresh, but I also would love to see some streamers use this for the communities. I'm curious how exactly it works, if you can do things like showing people streams or something, or if there's maybe some add-on to like Twitch Studio that works with this in the future and they can use like some of those official broadcast tools where they pull in people's streams, and or just make that process easier of some kind, because it kind of just seems like a bracket tool right now, I guess, which is still cool. I think it's really good for Twitch, but I'd like to see more features baked in there too, where you can show things on the extension, and they might be there. I haven't done all the research, but things like when you're the actual person hosting the event, you can show somebody's stream, and then like in the extension, it shows their stream info, and trying to do more of the stream side of it too, and not just a tournament, I think, is how this really stands out from other platforms that have bracket systems built out, like Smash, GG, and battle.
Champion GG.
There's our
challenge.
Challenge. I think that's the one. That one's really good. So I think it's really cool to see this. I just want to see more streamer features baked into it to really flesh it out. And hopefully we do see streamers use it, because I've not seen one yet, but it could be pretty cool if it's done right, I think.
Yeah, and I'd be interested to know like how the actual management of who beat who, like, do you have to do that as the organizer, or can you, you know, have some mods helping you like put results in and things like that? I guess I really just need to like set up a competition to actually test all of these features. But I think it's interesting. It's definitely a good tool for Twitch. Like you said, if they can implement the streaming side of it, you know, where you as the host can like embed somebody else's stream within yours, you know, just exactly like the Twitch competitions do. I think that could be really cool. I very much doubt that that's the current state. I think probably you're right. This is just like a tournament organizer where you can like have a sign up page on your Twitch channel. But I think it'll be really interesting. I'm definitely going to follow along with the development, because the more tools that they can give to individual broadcasters to run competitions, I think the better. If it's not major, major orgs that are running the competitions, and instead, you know, you running a competition for, you know, your community of 50 people, and the winner gets, I don't know, to play with you or to win a keyboard or something like that. I think that could be really cool and a really useful tool for people to help grow their audience like in a really authentic way.
Mm-hmm. And it's cool that it links with your Twitch account too and things like that, so you can register ahead of time and create these events in the calendar for people to look forward to. So that is pretty cool. And again, any more features that we get for streamers to have things to do with events or channel points or anything else going forward, I think just adds more cool things that the community can be part of. So I think it's a great feature, and I will definitely try it out if we get the chance to use it, just to see what it's like. And hopefully there are some cool features that come out too down the road. We also had some other cool things happen this week. Which one do you want to jump into next?
I think let's talk about Maya's charity event that we saw this week. So for people that don't follow, Maya is a streamer who has become popular sort of within the streamer houses and things like that. But she has built a charity effectively to make an animal sanctuary somewhere in Texas. I believe they live in Texas. I think I've read that somewhere. And she's obviously a big streamer, big personality in the streaming world. So she got a lot of her big streamer friends to donate things that she could then auction off in the charity to raise money to build this animal sanctuary. So you saw, you know, like all the big streamers. The one that I saw clipped most on Twitch was that you could win an hour of gaming with Shroud. And yep. Ludwig won that, I think, for $53,000 or something like that. You know, Ludwig is definitely a big enough streamer that could have just contacted Shroud and said, like, do you want to stream together at some point for an hour, and did it for free? But I guess when it's all going to charity, it's all good. But yeah, $53,000. So I think a lot of big streamers also donated and won, like, these funny little... there was like train wreck's table that had been broken in half like a year before or something like that, that went on auction and all these kind of things. So yeah, I think this is really cool. Obviously the animal sanctuary is going to be amazing, and it's good to be donating to charity. I imagine there's going to be a lot of like live stream content around building the charity. And then when the animals are there, I imagine maybe she would have thought about actually having live streams where you can watch the different animals in the sanctuary. But it's pretty big news. Like charity events like this always get pretty major coverage, especially when you get a lot of the big name streamers involved. Mm-hmm. So did you catch any of it? What was your favorite prize that got won and auctioned for?
I fought a lot of it. It was really funny to see all the different prizes, and it really was a lot of the top biggest streamers bidding on each other's stuff, or each other in a sense, that's some with Shroud and things like that. I think the one you mentioned was pretty funny, because Ludwig paid like $53,000 for an hour of Shroud, but then Shroud about an hour with S-Fan, I think, for like $11,000 or something. So a slight price difference there. That was pretty funny. But I just think this is really cool, because we talk a lot about charity events. They're a huge part of Twitch for sure. But I've not really seen a lot where people are building a new charity or kind of developing it from the ground up. Not to say there's anything wrong with just supporting existing charities. I think that's great. But it's cool to be part of something where the viewers and everyone else who's donating for this cause can actually kind of help form the charity and almost be part of its story together. And then, like you said, if there are actually live streams at the sanctuary and like they're documenting the whole process of building it, I think it's really cool to involve the community where they're really very invested in the cause of this, because they're really part of it and funding it and making it happen. So I think it's super cool. And I'm interested to see if we'll see other streamers kind of start their own things down the line too, with other types of charity programs for other avenues. So I just think it's really cool. And props to all the streamers who kind of donated their things and their hair and everything else to make this happen. I think it's really cool to see the community come together for bigger things than just gaming. I'm a big fan of that on Twitch. And this is one of the coolest things I've seen. So props to the whole team for doing that and for the streamers for donating their money for making that happen. And all the viewers too. There were some viewers who were a big part of that too.
To go back to the funniest one of Ludwig winning an hour's shroud, I saw like some highlights from Ludwig's stream and one of the top donators who was right up there at like $45,000 or something was just a streamer with like 20 average viewers who just really loved Shroud and wanted to have an hour gaming with him. I think there's probably better investments if you want to make it as a streamer than hoping that an hour with Shroud is going to be the thing that changes your popularity. But yeah, like you said, good that a lot of big streamers donated their stuff and also then bid on things because they obviously have disposable income and charitable donations is one way to use that. And it's for a good cause. So really cool to see that. Also, we covered last week quite a lot about the Twitch purple screen of death. And we talked about how YouTube does a better job of dealing with embeds. And funnily enough, maybe they listen to our podcast, but we've seen actually some examples of YouTube testing, I would guess like a more prominent version of trying to get people from embeds to watch on YouTube. We said that it was something that YouTube didn't really push too hard. And then literally within a week, they're now trying to push people to stop watching through embeds and click through to watch on YouTube. It's nowhere near as bad as the purple screen of death. We're talking like a lower third watermark in the bottom left of the video, I think it is, where it says like, you know, watch this video on YouTube. Literally just says, I think maybe watch on YouTube, just three words. But it is interesting that we have now seen both major platforms try to get less people watching on embeds and more people watching on the platform.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, it makes sense because you're always going to get more value when people are on your platform, ideally, especially if it's built better, but then also for retention with YouTube. You know, it's going to lead to more videos watched and down the rabbit hole that we all know very well. And with Twitch, it's going to open up things like subscribing and hopefully going to more streams, although they're still working on that and things like that. So, of course, you want to get people on your platform at the end of the day. I think that's the whole reason that you have embeds, really, is to kind of promote that platform in other places. It's just how it's handled, right? Because Twitch has completely broken the experience where you can just see a second of the stream and then really it's getting so bad at this point, to my understanding, that you really can't watch much off Twitch anymore. Versus YouTube will still let you watch it, but say, hey, come watch YouTube if you want to watch this. And while they did add the button and maybe it's a little bit more intrusive, you're not fundamentally breaking the experience of watching it. So I think YouTube is still handling this pretty well, and hopefully Twitch can learn from this. It feels like such a short-term decision from Twitch. And I know we've talked a lot about this topic, so I don't want to harp on it too much because it's been going on for 3 weeks now. I think we've talked about it, but still, it just feels like, yes, you have to prioritize the platform of getting people on there and growing the user base and trying to help with retention, things like that. But at the same time, you don't want to hamstring your efforts to grow on other platforms and be on new websites that you might not have been on if you didn't have that embed feature and make it watchable. And then maybe like just tone down the frequency of the purple screen of death, so it's not every 15 minutes, or just make it very quick or something. Or, you know, like YouTube, have a real just subtle thing there for them to come watch if they want to. So I think YouTube once again is doing a better job here. Do you have any thoughts here?
Yeah, they're definitely doing a better job because it's less intrusive, and at the end of the day you got to be thinking about your users. But like you said, I understand the point of view from both Twitch and YouTube that they want to get people on platform. YouTube definitely does a much, much better job of serving people relevant content once that video is over. So if they can watch you, if they can get you to move from watching an embed where as soon as the video is finished you're not going to watch anything, you know, you're probably going to keep scrolling on the website where the embed is, to on platform where they literally have like a next video ready to autoplay, as well as like 20 or so videos down the right hand side, which are similar to the video you just watched and all those kind of things, then I can understand. Whereas Twitch right now, you know, they want to get people on platform, but not many people are actually clicking through to a different streamer once a streamer's finished. They kind of just leave. So that's a massive issue that Twitch is trying to solve. So I can understand why they're doing it. I just thought it was really funny that literally a week after we said, YouTube doesn't really even try and push you onto YouTube. And then they've implemented a change that it has done. So,
well, you know, it's not so bad when you look at Twitch and their competition is doing this thing, then it makes what they're doing look a lot better. So it's the good time to do it, I guess. True. They're going to add that.
Yeah, true. Another thing that we talked about last week, which is, there's some more news on, is we talked about how having Twitch chat embedded into your VODs or embedded into your stream, or having subscriber alerts on with people's usernames in, could in the future be a you know a DMCA takedown request effectively because of the GDPR laws, especially in the European Union. And we've heard some more news about that because we actually saw a streamer by the name of Loco, who does cover some like Twitch industry news. She interviewed a famous sort of, I guess he's like a Twitch lawyer. He's effectively carved his niche here. Noah Downs, he's been featured on loads of shows before and talks quite often about DMCA and things like that. She had him on for the show, and he basically said what we thought would be the case, where, you know, if a streamer, particularly from the EU, doesn't want to see their name on screen and a video on a stream or anything like that, they could file a claim because of GDPR. Effectively, your username is linked to you, so it's data on a website that you don't want to appear. So you can ask for it to be taken down, and then the streamer, in theory, has to agree to that request and remove the content.
Yeah, which I think at this point we've talked about for a couple of weeks, and it's pretty clear at this point that yes, it is a technically a legal concern that someone from the EU could request to take down that name from your VOD, and you have to do it. Now, personally, again, we've talked about, we don't want to be here fear-mongering and make you think that you have to take all the chat off the VODs and just, you know, otherwise you're going to get sued right away, because it's, to my knowledge, no one's actually done it yet, asked someone to take down their name from the VOD. So that hasn't happened. But then also, even if they do, like, taking down one VOD isn't that bad. Now, again, it could be the music situation where you hit a ton of VODs at once, and then, but it's not quite the same because you have that period where you can take it down after you've been asked to, and it's not like instant, you know, copyright strike for just using something like that. So I think I still am going to use this in my personal channel. Now, I think what's funny is on the actual VOD of watching this interview, they had the chat next to them on the stream while they were talking about it. So that was kind of ironic to me because they were doing the thing they said not to do. So clearly, again, I don't think it's like a huge deal, but it's just good to know if you are a streamer, like this could become an issue in the future. So just be aware of it. Again, I don't think it'll get to the same severity that music is at right now because it's just, you know, not a whole industry behind it, like we said. But still good to know about. And if you want to be really, really safe, if you're on a very brand-friendly channel and just want to take any potential risk of legal action out, then I would probably take the chat off of your VODs. Again, I don't think people will really get striked for this, but just good to know about ahead of time in case there's some, you know, doomsday scenario around this. Do you have thoughts, Pete?
Yeah, I think we've summed it up over the past couple of weeks, really. Like, I don't see this being an issue anytime soon, but if you want to be super safe, then Don't show chat on your streams or in your VODs on YouTube. But it's just an interesting conversation and nice to hear from a lawyer that effectively, yeah, if you want to be super safe, you shouldn't show it. We haven't talked about DMCA for a while though, and we've seen it come back into the news this week, but not for the reason that we usually talk about it, where police and other people are now using copyrighted material to get videos taken down. So I think the instance of this that kind of went viral was somebody live streaming or recording police, and the policeman or woman then went and turned on the radio or some music where they knew there was going to be copyrighted material, because they knew that that video or that live stream would then get taken down because of the copyrighted material. So they're effectively weaponizing the music, being able to play the music so that the video then gets taken down, so there's no evidence of what's just happened, which is just like, it's the most bonkers backward thing that I've ever seen, really. But yeah, I mean, music in public live streams, I think, is just such a weird instance of this law, where how can you be at fault if you're walking somewhere and somebody's radio from a car is playing copyrighted material? I just can't get my head around it.
It's so weird. And I know it's not directly related to streaming or gaming, but we've talked so much about DMCA that I thought it was interesting. Yeah, they're just using like these top 100 songs when people come up and try and film them. And, you know, because filming police has become very popular with just safety and everything else going on these days. So they've started using just top 100 songs as defense, essentially, to get Instagram videos taken down and TikTok videos and things like that, which is just really interesting. I don't know, because this has happened before with YouTube and live streaming, actually, on Twitch, is people who will walk by something. We talked about this in the podcast, who will hear 5 seconds of a song and then their entire VOD gets taken down for those 5 seconds. And so now it's not an accident, though. Now it's actually being used on purpose for, you know, if you're filming in some store you're not supposed to be in or streaming, then the manager is going to come out with, you know, playing Miley Cyrus on the phone, and then you're in trouble, and then your VOD's taken down. So I don't know. I don't know if this will catch on or if it's just a couple police officers who are doing this, but just really weird. I just want to talk about it this week because it's fascinating.
I honestly can see it happening. You know, if live streaming becomes, especially if live streaming IRL, once the pandemic ends, live streaming IRL comes back, then you're going to see people that don't want to be live streamed maybe catch on to the fact that if they play music out of their phone, the live streamers are going to have to move away because of fear of DMCA. So honestly, I can see it catching on. But yeah, it was a funny instance for sure.
The video is so funny to watch because the guy gets away. It's almost like he has like a disease or something. He's like, music, my only weakness, please. He like runs away to the other side. I know what you're doing. It's music. It's very surreal to watch. Anyway, just crazy to me.
Yeah, I think that probably does it for the main parts of the news. So we can jump on to, we actually do have a viewer question, but maybe before we get into the viewer question, we could cover a question that we saw pop off on Reddit this week, which I think is an interesting thing to discuss, which was, is it possible to grow with short streams? Now, before we jump into answering this each, I reckon we should probably define what we would consider a short stream. So what's your answer for what is a short stream?
Oh man, so for me, I would say a short stream is probably like the 1 to 2 hour range for most people. The average stream seems like the 4-ish hour mark, I would say, for what I've seen, maybe like 3 to 4 hour. You have to look at everybody, but that feels like a longer stream to me, or an average stream. So for like an hour or two feels pretty short. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think let's define a short stream as under 2 hours, that's a long amount of time to be streaming. I'm really considering it to be under an hour long stream, but let's say under 2 hours. So we can define that. So I'll jump in first. It's absolutely possible to grow with short streams. I reckon you could grow with sub 1 hour streams if you really had dialed in content and a reliable schedule where people knew when to come and watch you. A good example of this is like fantasy football. I know you have fantasy American football. We have the exact same thing over here, fantasy soccer, you can call it effectively. There's loads of live streams on YouTube of people giving advice on this, and lots of them are less than an hour. You know, just after a game has finished, they'll jump in and discuss what happened in the match and like which players should be bought and sold. And they're less than an hour and they have 5,000 plus viewers in these streams. So if the content suits short streams and, you know, it's timely, relevant content that people want to know about right then and there, you could absolutely grow a stream with a short stream. I think it definitely depends on the content. And maybe if we go into the gaming side of things, it's less relevant, but I'll throw that straight back over to you. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally agree. So I've been in this situation, and I think probably a lot of people have, who work full time and have kids and families, and it's just hard to find 4 hours to put a stream together, right? It's usually, I looked at the thread, this guy said between 45 to 90 minutes is what he has. So about what we were saying here. And you definitely can. I think there's some things you have to do if you're doing shorter streams. Keeping a consistent schedule as best you can. I know it's probably tough if you have kids and things like that, but even just like one night a week can be good. And then doing a lot with that hour, right? Like scripting out potentially a show of some kind. If you look at TV shows, right? I mean, TV shows are an hour or two each week traditionally, and those grow because they're consistent and they're really high quality when they're on. So it's just the same principle for your own stream of making it this consistent show, or just making it something big each week people look forward to. Even if you can only do once a week or something, I think it's just trying to make that the best hour that you can. And then everything outside that, even when you're not live, you can just support that 1 hour that you are live. So it can happen. It's definitely tricky, but at the same time, I think there's also this misconception that you have to be streaming all the time to grow, like 7 days a week, and oh, these guys can stream 8 hours a day. They're so lucky to be able to do that. And while it's nice to have more time to stream, having more time does not mean that you will grow faster necessarily. We've seen that a lot of times, people who just will stream for hours and hours and hours and then never really get anywhere with their stream. So it's much more about the quality of the content you're putting out than necessarily the quantity, in my opinion. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people put all of their free time into streaming, and if they put half of that time into planning their streams and then the other half into streaming, I think they definitely see more success, because it's not just about playing a video game anymore like it probably was 5 years ago, and people still have that mindset of like, oh look, Shroud just plays video games and earns millions of dollars a year, I can do that. But you're probably not as good to watch as Shroud, or not as skilled at a game as Shroud. And you now need to like put a lot of effort into the content behind your streams. It's not just you playing video games anymore. I think one thing I would say is, let's say we're talking about small streams being less than an hour. It's probably, if you can rearrange your schedule, it's probably better for you to have one stream a week, which is 3 hours long, than three streams a week, which are 1 hour long. Because if you can really nail down that schedule, the reason why an hour is quite a short period of time is, especially when you're new and starting out, you're not really discoverable for that long. You need people to be like coming into your stream, seeing 10 seconds of content and then saying, yeah, I want to stick around. And if you're only streaming for an hour, then you're not going to get many people just randomly, you know, coming across your stream or seeing your tweet or Instagram story about the fact that you're going live or anything like that. So it really depends. I wouldn't say it's an advantage to stream short periods of time, but absolutely, I think with the right content, you can grow with a short stream. And I think when I eventually figure out some kind of schedule to start streaming, and we've talked about it a few times on the podcast, whether that's going to be Twitch or YouTube, I don't think I'm going to do longer streams than like 2 hours each. I'd rather it be really interactive, like where I'm answering a lot of questions and maybe covering like a really detailed topic for an hour or 90 minutes or something like that. And then it's done, rather than like loads of filler content around it and sort of stumbling my way. I'd rather pack it full of value, save my time as well as saving a lot of the viewers' time, rather than, you know, having an 8 hour stream where we still cover the same amount of topic, but spread it out over 8 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's still important to think that you can still just make a lot out of YouTube and other platforms outside of streaming if you're short on streaming time. Like you said, I agree, it's better to do the 3 hour stream once a week than to do 3 1-hour streams a week if you can. But you can use that time that you can't commit to streaming to, you know, let people know ahead of time when you're going to be live and build some hype around this event each week and turn it into a YouTube series potentially and other things so that it does feel like a special event when it's on. I think event streaming is very underrated. And yes, it's more work than just going live and playing games, but ultimately, if you want to grow, that's going to be the better way to do it if you're really limited on time each week. So it's a good question, though, because I know a lot of people are in that situation. So shout out to the Twitch community for raising that one.
It's one of those weird things where I think people that are limited on time, I think you might have even said this in this call, but people that are limited on time think that if they had 8 hours a day, it would be easy to grow. And it's not true. But almost if you're pressured and limited on time, you make more use of the time that you do have than if you're unlimited. Like, yep. It's easy to get into that way where you have like 8 hours a day and you're trying to stream full time and you're then not really focusing a lot of your energy on actually making good content. Instead, you're just sat at your computer mm-hmm. playing games for 8 hours a day, which just doesn't work anymore.
It's kind of like, I know people who want to be streaming full time, right? Like they have full time jobs and kids and they have all these great ideas for streaming. And like, if I could only stream all day, here's what I'd do. And then somehow they eventually get to the point where they can do full time streaming, but all those ideas die because suddenly it's like overwhelming and they don't end up doing those things. So sometimes I think having a short amount of time to do things can actually give you more creativity if you commit to them. So there's some benefits there too.
Yeah, just spin it. I would say if you've only got 60 minutes like to do a stream, spin it in a way, you know, where you're trying to do something in 60 minutes, have a countdown timer on your stream and be like, listen, I've got 60 minutes to try and complete this level of a game or whatever. And at 60 minutes, I'm stopping my stream. It doesn't matter what I'm happening. Like, turn it into some kind of unique selling point to your stream that nobody else has. But the short answer, is it possible to grow with short streams? Yes. I wouldn't say it's easier, but I definitely wouldn't say it's impossible. Let's jump onto the viewer question, because that technically wasn't directed at us. We're just pretending that we're the moderators of the Reddit Twitch subreddit and taking questions from there. But our viewer question comes from somebody called Kieran, who asks, what's a good XLR microphone? I'm looking to change to a dual PC setup for stream and going to change to XLR inputs for my mic. Any suggestions? Now, I'll start because I'm hosting this show, Ben, not you, this week. so I'll take the easy answer and leave you with a more difficult one. I think obviously it depends massively on budget. I would probably, if this was one of my friends and we're having a conversation, I would jump straight into, why do you want a dual PC stream? You know, do you actually know the advantages? Is it just going to be an expensive headache with lots of mess? But let's say that they've decided and there is a legitimate reason for a dual PC stream and they also want to upgrade their audio to using an XLR setup, something like the Go XLR, which makes dual PC streaming really quite handy. But there's certainly other XLR setups that you can have. The microphones, I think you have a lot of choice now that you're entering the XLR world. And it depends a lot on your environment and your voice. The first real decision you have to make is if you want a dynamic microphone or a condenser microphone. And that depends on your environment and what kind of sound you want out, what your voice sounds like. You know, do you want to have it, your microphone on screen right next to your mouth like me and Ben have right now? Or do you want it you know, out of frame and being able to pick up your voice from, you know, a couple of feet away. So there's a lot of questions I would ask here. It's not really that easy to give a blanket answer. And I know a lot of people will be watching this and seeing both me and Ben using the Shure SM7B like a lot of top streamers do, but it's absolutely not the perfect mic for everybody. I wouldn't even say it's the perfect mic for me, and I'm going to keep rotating microphones and testing them even through this podcast to make sure that, you know, I learn a lot about different kinds of mics. So I haven't really answered, but I've given a lot of questions back to Kieran. What do you think?
Yeah, so I'll give a blanket answer. You have to have the Shure SM7B to be a streamer. Watch Pete's video. He did the research. Otherwise, you're not real. So no, you absolutely do not need this mic, despite us both having it and everyone apparently having this on Twitch. Like Pete said, there's a lot to consider with both dynamic versus condenser. Personally, I think that condensers are a little bit underrated in a sense, and I think there's like some really good microphones from the Rode series. I know the Pod Mic is supposed to be really good. I've not tried that, but
that is a great microphone, but that is a dynamic microphone, the Pod Mic.
Oh, sorry. Well, I've heard that's very similar to this one actually, but for a fraction of the price essentially of this one. So I would look at that one if I was starting over. I really like the NT1 series as well from Rode, which is a condenser, I believe, the 1 and the 1A. So I know those are all Rode microphones, but I've had good experiences with those. Even like just small, simple dynamic mics. I have like this Sennheiser mic that I started with that was like $80. But the thing about XLR mics is they last forever, essentially. It's different than USB microphones because, you know, the Wave from Elgato will probably get an upgrade a year from now or that kind of thing. But like tried and true XLR mics are just timeless, essentially. So I think as long as you pick a decent one, you can always use it for something. You know, I don't use that same small XLR mic that I used to, but I still have it. So if I have like an interview down the road or some sort of like multi-person setup, I can just bring it out and it's still as good as ever. So I think as long as you get a decent XLR mic, then you're pretty much good to go for a while. And I think it is better personally than USB mics for me.
Yeah, I think... Firstly, the Pod Mic is a great suggestion because it's relatively cheap. I think it's about $100, £100 in the UK, certainly. It's a great dynamic microphone. Dynamic mics in general are better for untreated environments because you put them much closer to your mouth so you can then lower your levels so that you don't have as much room noise. So things like reverb or computer fans are less likely to be picked up because you're effectively increasing the sound of your voice versus the sound that you don't want of reverb and room noise. So it's a really great suggestion. If you want to go the condenser route and not have your microphone right up next to your mouth, like you said, I really like the NT1 and the NT1A. They're definitely a little bit more expensive. I know that Blue have like a whole handle. I think once you're getting into the realm of XLR microphones, you basically need to start doing your research because they're professional level microphones and you need to really think about your environment. Watch enough content about people reviewing the microphones in different environments with different voices because it's not as simple as I like watching Shroud stream and I want to sound like him because he has a different voice and he lives in a different place and he probably has a different interface and all these kind of things that you have to get into. So I think we've given some good options there, but it completely depends on budget, environment, voice, all those kind of things. So I'll probably do a video deep diving into like an XLR microphone comparison. But again, I'm going to have to just emphasize that my voice is different to yours.
The only thing I would add on there too is I would not go for a cheap XLR microphone. There's a lot of like cheap XLR stuff on Amazon that's a bundle kit with, you know, that gets the boom arm and the cable and everything else. I bought one of those back in the day and it broke very quickly. And so I was like, you know, $80-$100 down the drain where I could have just bought a slightly better mic and probably been fine because it was kind of just not a brand name or something third party. So don't go that route. Don't like try and cheap on the XLR. I would get something decent. Doesn't have to be the Shure, obviously, but like the Pod Mic is going to be something more reputable that's not going to break on you if you get something cheaper. So just a good note to have there too.
Yeah, and don't go overboard as well. I feel like this mic is already like way... at the end of the day, when you're streaming on Twitch, like most people are watching on their phone or through the, like, you know, AirPods or earbuds, or like they're not going to be able to hear the difference between these microphones, the majority of people, and XLR microphones can easily go $2,000, $5,000, $10,000. So like, just be sensible with it. You're probably going to be able to EQ even a Pod Mic to sound as good as the SM7B or better for your voice and all these kind of things. But it's kind of an open-ended question, but I feel like we've given it enough open-ended answers that hopefully it's been answered for Kieran. But you could literally spend hours talking about this. And there's plenty of good YouTube channels of people that review microphones and things like that, the one I would recommend is Podcastage. We've had him on the podcast before, so it does a YouTube video reviewing microphones effectively. So he probably has, you know, hundreds of videos reviewing every single different microphone and talking about what the sound profile is like and noise rejection and all those kind of things. So definitely recommend his channel. And yeah, make sure you do your research and compare lots of different voices with lots of different videos and lots of different environments. I think that's probably about it, Ben, unless there's anything I've missed that you want to cover.
No, I think that's pretty much it. Hopefully we'll have some new cool stuff to talk about next week, but pretty good week of news, and we'll see what comes up next. Make sure you guys ask questions too, by the way. If you have questions like the XLR microphone or your own streaming questions, or you're wondering how to avoid getting weaponized DMCAs used against you in public, just let us know and we'll do our best to answer each week.
Yeah, maybe we're going to see IRL streamers using dynamic microphones so that they can reject all of the police playing copyrighted music.
That's right, point it the other way.
6 feet away from them, yeah. Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. As Ben said, leave us a comment with what you want to know about. Ask us a question on the YouTube comments or on either of our Twitters or Instagrams. And all of our socials are in the show notes to this show, so check us out there and we'll catch you next week. Peace.
See ya.